Welcome to the Versus History Podcast with your hosts, Patrick O'Shaughnessy, Connell Smith and Elliot Watson.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this episode of the Versus History Podcast. It's me, Patrick O'Shaughnessy, at History Chappie on social media today. We are absolutely delighted to be joined by debut novelist Annie Domingo, who is an actress who has now written her first book, Breaking the Marfa Chain. Now, I'm not going to say too much about it because Annie has lots to say on this brand new book. It's absolutely captivating. It's a roller coaster. There are some very, very challenging aspects of it, some very, very emotional aspects, but it's a fantastic book. Annie, thank you so much for joining us today on Versus History.
Thank you for the invitation.
The pleasure really, really is all ours. Now, please, not only your book, I mean, you have a fantastic backstory too, coming from merging the drama and now the history world and the novelist world. So please tell us about you and that journey from drama to history and your journey, your trajectory towards your first book.
Well, I've always been interested in writing. I was born in England and then went home to Sierra Leone in West Africa with my parents when I was about four. And of course, I was born quite a few years ago. And at those days, we didn't have television or easy access to this, to the cinema. So we did a lot of reading. And so I started reading from a very early age. I had two younger brothers and I used to love to tell them stories and that. And so when it came, when I was a bit older and I could write, I started writing them down. But this was always sort of like a hobby and a hobby that grew. And I never really thought that I would become a novelist. But I decided when I was in my 50s to go back to university. And there I started doing some creative writing. When I did my master's, I did it in creative writing. And sort of from what I was getting from the tutors and that made me think, well, maybe I can write something. So I started writing short stories and some poems. I'm not the best poet, but sometimes if a subject comes that really touches me, I will write that. But novels seem to be a big thing out there. I mean, I came back to England to go to drama school because I was always interested in words and playing with words and using words. So if I wasn't going to be a writer, drama was quite close to what I wanted. And I love acting. So I've been acting since I left drama school and doing television, theatre, radio. But I always was interested in the words. And so when I had the opportunity to do this master's in creative writing, I did. And this is all due to a couple of friends of mine, because they decided we should all enter the competition, the Lucy Cavendish fiction competition for women in Cambridge, part of Cambridge University. And I didn't think that I had enough, but you didn't have to finish the book. They just needed the first 40 pages, and I had about 45 pages. So
wow.
I edited it. I left it so late that I had to hand deliver it because I live in Cambridgeshire, not far from Cambridge, and you could send in a hard copy. You could post them a hard copy, or you could do it by email. And I hand delivered it. At 11:45 for the deadline of midday. And then
wow, you're cutting it fine.
That was leaving it tight. It was long listed and then shortlisted, and it came second. And I thought, oh, well, I have something. It was unfinished. And so with the encouragement of my friends, I slowly started doing more research. I love research. So I would research and I'd go to the places where I was writing about as well. So that all took time. In between that, I had things going wrong with my family. My son had a car crash and broke his back. So he was in a wheelchair and so on. So that took time away from writing. So this book has been going on for quite a while, but it's been something that's been inside of me and a story that I find very telling and a story that I think is really important for people to hear. So I didn't give up on it. I just persevered, and ever so often I'd go away and do some writing. And over the past sort of 3 or 4 years, it has won several awards and things, although it hasn't been published yet. And each time that happened, it was encouragement to keep on writing and get it to the finish. And for me, one of the biggest things was there's a fantastic publisher in England. Oh, she's no longer a publisher, but she used to be a publisher, called Margaret Busby. And about 26 years ago, she had a book out called Daughters of Africa that had over 200 writers of women of color from the diaspora, from England and around. And so 2 years ago, she decided to do, for the 25th anniversary, to do New Daughters of Africa. And so you had more modern writers as well as old writers. So you have people like Chimamanda, Zadie Smith, Mallory Blackman, Aminata Fona, and so on. But then they decided to have a competition for somebody who had been published. And again, being pushed from the back, I entered at the last minute, again, the competition. And to my surprise, I won it. So an extract of Breaking the Maffa Chain is in this anthology with all these famous people or people who had published. And that was the final thing that made me say, you're right, this has to be published, because so many people were talking about it and it had won other small awards. I felt that there's enough interest for me to be able to find a publisher to do it. So that's the journey of Breaking the Maffa Chain.
Oh, that is quite some journey. I suppose that leads us organically onto the next question. What is this fantastic new book, Breaking the Maffa Chain, all about? Because the description states that it will, and I quote verbatim, will take readers on a journey of loss, survival, hope, identity, and tradition. How so? What's the book all about?
Well, as I said, I'm from Sierra Leone, and you hear stories from about olden days and people. And this was a story I knew, because I know her descendants, of a woman called Sarah Forbes Bonetta. And she was very interesting because she was captured as a slave in the 1840s, 1845. And this was at the time when slavery had been abolished in England since the 1807. But in America, there was still slavery. Britain finished slave trade, which is different from slavery, in 1837. And they then had ships patrolling west coast of Africa to stop the illegal trade of slaves. So Captain Forbes Bonetta, who was the captain of the Bonetta, was in Dahomey, what is now called Dahomey, sort of pleading with the king to stop the slave trade and to go into other trade. And as part of the ceremony in that, they were doing human sacrifices. And one of these human sacrifices was this little girl who was about 7 or 8. And Captain Forbes begged for her not to be killed. And the king, to embarrass him, said, okay, I'll give her as a gift to Queen Victoria, a gift from the King of the Blacks to the Queen of the Whites. And so Captain Forbes did not know what to do with this girl, because he was afraid that if he left her behind, she would be killed. So he brought her to England, thinking that it could be gone with the missionaries or something. But Queen Victoria took an interest in this girl. And so the story is about this girl, and it starts off with her. And we know that her family were wiped out. Although they don't know what happened to her family, but we do know that she had siblings. And I wanted to show the life that she'd come from to the life that she came to. So we see it from two points of view, from Sarah's point of view, because her name was changed to Sarah, and from her sister's point of view, because her sister also was captured. The sister is fictional. This is a fiction based on a real life person. And I wanted to look at the dichotomy of these two girls who were brought up in the same village to start with, had the same lifestyle, and one gets sent to America as a slave, and the other one gets sent to England, where she's called the African princess, the Black princess. And she was a favorite with Queen Victoria. She spent a lot of time at Windsor Castle. She grew up with Queen Victoria's children and is looking at their lives. And her sister comes to England at some point as a slave, although they called her a maid. And a lot of times in the book, they're in the same place, but they're seeing it from completely different points of view, with a different gaze. When you're looking at it as a maid, as somebody who has no power, and you're looking at it as a princess, what do you see? What comments do you say? What things do you think about when you're looking at the same thing, but from those different gaze? And that's what the book is about.
Wow, dazzling story. One thing that keeps me doing this podcast is the fact that when our listeners listen to authors like yourself, they get inspired, and a good few now have gone on to start writing their own books and pamphlets. So the question for you, Annie, is this: how did you go about researching this book?
I love research. In fact, sometimes I seem to enjoy it more than actually writing, because I get fired up and I find little information. And I think that what you have to do, especially if it's a historical novel, is to find out the period that you want and then start looking into all sorts of things. In doing this, one of my major research points was using Queen Victoria's diaries, which you can get online. And I spent months meticulously going through it, looking at things that she said, things that she did, politically as well as domestic point of view. Because one of the things that fired me up about this this girl was the fact that Queen Victoria wrote several times about her in her personal diaries. And yet, if you read any biography of Queen Victoria, she's hardly ever mentioned. And they're thinking, why? Why was Queen Victoria interested in this girl? So I needed to know what life was like in Queen Victoria's time and within her domestic arena, because she saw Sarah several times, not just once or twice. And she provided for Sarah. So I wanted to find that connection. Then I wanted to look at what was Victorian England like. And so I did a lot of research, from looking at things like Charles Dickens to looking at bus maps. What kind of buses did they have? What kind of transport did they have? What kind of food would they have in the house? So you just go in and research and research. And then you take journeys. I knew that they went to Hyde Park, and I wanted to see what Hyde Park looked like now, and then imagine what it would have looked like then. What would they have seen? What would she have smelled, and so on? So the research is trying to find out where you want to place it, and then find out as much as you can about that area, if it's a place, the names of the streets, whatever. But then know that you can't use all of it. You don't want it to be research heavy. What I want is for me to have a flavor of that time. Then I can put my characters into that place, into that time. So especially with historical novels, and you don't always have to go to the place. Now we're very lucky. You can get quite a lot of things that you need via the internet, but you've got to be careful with the internet, because there's a lot of false information there. So I never just take anything the first place I see it on the internet. I will go and check and see if there's another version, and does somebody say something contrary, and so on. And then from that, try to get the truth. But of course, if it's fiction, you can't just write everything that's true. Physical things, yes. But you have to then think about the emotional things, how would they have felt and that. And sometimes things change a bit. I mean, I always say that Shakespeare wrote a lot of history plays, but if you really go by the history of Shakespeare, you would get history wrong. There are lots of things where he made it up, and because it suited the way he wanted to tell the story. to research, but then find out how you can use the research for your book, for yourself.
Thank you, Annie. Okay, you've mentioned her already, but Sarah Forbes-Bonessa, she's one of the central characters, the young African princess who was sold into slavery, almost executed, before being saved by a British naval captain. On her arrival in Britain, she became the goddaughter of Queen Victoria and eventually a prominent abolitionist. Please tell us about this fascinating story, and furthermore, how was it possible for a Black person to reach the very apex of Victorian society, given what we know about racism at the time? So how was it possible? And tell us more about her life, if you can.
Well, to talk about Sarah's life, is this first book looks at her early life and up to when she first comes to England, because there's so much in it that you would have had a huge tome of a book. So I'm already writing the sequel to Breaking the Maffa Chain, which looks at her adult life. So, but for Sarah, how it happened is that when she is brought to England by Captain Forbes, and he sends notice to the Admiralty that he has this girl, and it was supposed to be a gift, in quotation marks, for Queen Victoria. So they had to inform Queen Victoria. And Queen Victoria asked to meet Sarah. And for me, that's part of the interesting thing, that this wasn't the first time. Queen Victoria was very much interested in what was happening in Africa, in America. She met quite a lot of Black people when they came to England. She met a lot of the ex-slaves or escaped slaves. She, Prince Albert's first public address speech on his own was to the abolitionist society. So they were very much interested in what was going on in that period. So, and I think when she met Sarah, she was very impressed by Sarah. And part of it is that she saw the child as being, because she was a child, and this child who had been whisked away and giving and had such a hard time of it. And I think it there was something that echoed in Queen Victoria, who had been a lonely child. And so she was interested. And also one of the things, and Captain Forbes writes about Sarah and when he first met her in his book, he wrote a 2-volume book about meeting the Dahomeyans. So she was interested in what Captain Forbes had to say about what was going on and how they were fighting the slave trade. And one of the things that Captain Forbes said was that this girl was highly intelligent, and already after just a few months from being on the ship with Captain Forbes and getting to England, she was quite fluent in English and was picking up other languages. So immediately you see that Queen Victoria was interested. She could have just have sent her off to be looked after by somebody else. But Captain Forbes, Sarah was kept with Captain Forbes and his family and his children, and they lived in Windsor. And then Queen Victoria asked to see Sarah again and again. And this was one of the things that intrigued me. Why? Because Queen Victoria first mentioned her in November, early November, and it was her son's birthday, and she said, met my Black God's child for the first time. And then as you're reading through, in the beginning of January, she writes again in her diary, met my Black God child for the fourth time. And I thought, between 10th of November and early January, to have met this girl for four times over the Christmas period meant that there was some connection, that she was really interested in this child. And that was one of the things that fired me up to look more and more into her diaries and what she said. So it was the circumstances. And because Sarah was very intelligent, because she was very personable, because people liked her, she became friendly, for example, with Queen Victoria's children, especially Princess Alice. So there was that connection, and therefore she was talked about. She was written about a lot in the newspapers. So I went through lots of newspaper cuttings. They would talk about what she was doing when she was visiting London and so on.
Thank you, Annie. Okay, the story juxtaposes Sarah's high society life with that of her sister, who is sent to America as a slave. What twists of fate and turning points set their respective life journeys on those completely different trajectories?
Yes, well, the first twist of fate is that they got separated after they were captured. And because the older sister, who was renamed Faith, was put on a ship and taken off to America, they were not kept together. So all through the book, one of the things about Sarah is that she's hoping to find her sister. Because she was quite young when they were first captured. She was only about 4 or 5. And she didn't remember much about her brothers or her parents. It's what happens with children. You know, if it's not there talking about it, they think about it, and then gradually they fade the memory or what that person looks like or whatever. But her sister was very much part of her, because the sister looked after her when they were on the trek, when they were first captured. And so you have this connection. And meanwhile, the sister was always wondering what had happened to her little sister, and she felt guilty that she hadn't been able to protect her. And the twist of fate in the story is the fact that Faith is brought to England as a maid to look after, they pretend she's a maid, but she's still a slave. And therefore you can see how each is treated and what are their joys and what are their sorrows. But for the two, my question always was, who was more enslaved? Because although Faith was a slave, she had some freedoms in as much as she had freedom of the mind. And that was something that couldn't be taken away from her. So she was able to hold on to her language. She was able to hold on to her tradition, probably also because she was much older. She was 10 years older. So I wanted somebody older who could comment on what they had lost. And so Faith, being 10 years older, could comment on that. And I did not want to follow her as a slave in this book in America. So we saw her, although she talked about her life and what had happened to her when she first went to America as a slave, I don't dwell on that so much. I wanted to look at where she was now at this point. So you have the chapters go from both points of view. So sometimes it'd be from Faith's point of view, sometimes it'd be from Sarah's point of view. And as they tell the story, and sometimes it's parallel because they're at the same place at the same time, but they don't know each other. They don't see each other. They're not their assistants, but they're as commentators on what is going on.
Thank you, Annie. Okay, if you could, please tell us about the life and conditions that Faith would have endured or experienced as a slave in America. And the appendage question is, were there any similarities or differences to the lives of those who were slaves in the United States of America after independence and those who were slaves in the British West Indies or the Caribbean?
Oh, now you're going into my second book, mister.
Well, that's how we roll in Versus History.
No, I'm joking. Faith does talk about what happened to her. I mean, first of all, on the journey, which it was horrendous. The book opens with a prologue of Faith when she is first put into the slave ship. So you immediately hear her voice and what is going on for her. She is put into, she's sold, and she's taken to a plantation where there were other slaves. And throughout the book, she would mention or talk about some of the things that happened, the people that she met there, and the conditions. There are two kinds of slaves in America. You know, you have what they call the field slaves and the house slaves. And there was a whole thing about the field slaves are woken up and they work in the fields hard, and there's a house slaves that supposedly have it easier. But then, as always, my question is, who is more enslaved? Who is enslaved? Because although Faith worked in the house, she never had any time off. She was at the beck and call of her masters and her mistress all the time, whereas those who were in the fields at the end of the day when it was dark, even though it was a poor shack they might be in, but they had neighbors, they could do their own thing. Even in some plantations, they could have a little plot where they could grow their own vegetables. So what sometimes from the outside might seem a better deal is not always the better deal. And that's what I look at throughout the novel.
Thank you, Annie. Okay, then the final big question from me. It's quite a short one, actually. What can we learn from your book about identity and belonging? Quite an esoteric question, but over to you.
Well, for me, the book is also very much about identity, about who are you. As I said earlier on, Faith knew who she was. She knew her language. She had the memories, and she held on to it. In the prologue, she talks about, I must remember, I will remember, I have to remember so I can pass it on to my children, to my children's children, and my children's children's children. And that's to do with identity. It's to do with holding on to what you have. Because when you move from one country to the next, you take with you your language, you take with you your words, you take with you the ideas of food and that. And some people let it slip by and go, or don't pass it on to the next generation. And therefore, because sometimes we want to just to be assimilated. And Sarah is assimilated into English society, whereas Faith, even though it seems as if she was assimilated into the American society through slavery, she kept it. She kept who she was. She knew who she was. She knew her language, where Sarah remembered a few words but couldn't speak it. So she, when she goes back to Africa or goes back to her village, she will be a stranger. And that's what happens to a lot of us even now. You know, my children were born here, grown up. They know a few words of my language, but if they went to Sierra Leone and somebody spoke to them fluently, they would be lost. They would know, they would be foreigners. And this is what happens. And I wanted to look at, what do we hold? What is precious to make us who we are? Is it our language? Is it our faith? Is it the way we dress, the way we eat? What is it that makes us who we are?
Absolutely fascinating. Thank you very, very much, Annie Domingo, for coming on the Versus History to talk to us about your book, Breaking the Martha Chain. Before we let you go, is there anything you would like to tell us that you haven't had a chance to mention because my questions didn't give you the scope or capacity to talk about? So basically, is there anything that you wanted to say that my questions didn't allow you to say?
Nothing in particular, because if I start going on about it, which I'm very, very happy to do, I would tell you the whole story and then people would not buy the book. So
and we don't want that.
They have to go and buy the book. The only thing I will say is that she is such a fascinating character, and that her descendants are still alive. I know them. I talk to them. I've seen gifts that Queen Victoria gave to Sarah's children, daughter. So it's something, it might be historical, but it's something that's living and continues, and which is why I'm now writing my second book about her at a later life.
Well, we can't wait for that one. So in terms of your first one, though, where can our audience pick this up? When is it out and who's it published by? What are the key details we need to know to get hold of Breaking the Martha Chain?
It is published by my wonderful publishers called Jacaranda. Jacaranda is the publisher that's published it in England. It is going to be launched on the 23rd of September, and you can get it from Jacaranda's bookshop, but it will also be it could be pre-ordered soon from Amazon and I think in some other bookstore, but certainly Amazon and also Jacaranda. So
fantastic.
It's 23rd of September.
Okay, well, Versus History audience, please bear that date in mind. It's a very important one. This excellent book will be available for purchase. So please do go and pick up a copy of Breaking the Marfa Chain by Annie Domingo, a fantastic book, groundbreaking in so many, many ways. Annie, thank you so much for coming on to Versus History to talk about your brand new book with us. We really, really value this time, and we're so thankful that you've given us this opportunity to hear about this fantastic new book. So thank you.
Thank you very much, and it was lovely talking to you.
You too. All the best and goodbye.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Versus History Podcast. Visit us at www.versushistory.com and follow us at Versus History on Twitter and Instagram. You can download all episodes from iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or from wherever you get your podcasts.